Hi everyone, and welcome to Mind Body Green's beauty podcast, Clean Beauty School. I'm your host and beauty director, Alexandra Engler. So today is a very special episode because we are talking about one of my favorite rituals, Gua Sha. Personally, I do it almost every day, and I do my full body almost weekly. And if I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, it's a ritual I started years before I actually understood much of the historical and cultural practices surrounding it. See, Gua Sha has really made the rounds in the beauty and social media spaces in the last several years. My Instagram feed was nothing but influencers showing off their stones and routines. But so many of them didn't necessarily share the full story of Gua Sha. And even now in the beauty space, I'm not sure many people really appreciate the full scope of its use. But one woman I know does, Debbie Kung. Debbie is a licensed acupuncturist and doctor of acupuncture and oriental medicine. She's also, I might add, a very fabulous skincare expert. So in her own practice, she specializes in facial rejuvenation, and I've had the pleasure of working with her for a while now. And one of her passions is education. So when I wanted to do an episode on Gua Sha, there was no one better to loop in. Debbie, without further ado, welcome.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me. It's so nice to be here.
So, you know, I just want to start off and have you explain your story. How did you get into skincare? What brought you to natural beauty? You know, tell me about your practice. I'd love to hear it all.
So when I guess it started with skincare for me is I kind of fell into it. It wasn't something that I actually sought out, but it was something that I naturally progressed into. So it comes from, I guess, when I was a child, I just remember where I grew up in a community in Virginia where, you know, there wasn't that many minorities. I was well aware of how I looked, my aesthetics, my facial features, my skin tone. And I think from that, just having that, you know, acute awareness from such a young age kind of pivoted me into a direction where I became more aware of the way I dressed and the way I held myself and the way I talked. And so that in itself, you know, is all about presentation. So for me, you know, growing up in a small community, I became more or less very well aware at such a young age of my appearance. And I realized that the first thing people notice when they see you, obviously, is your skin, right? Our skin is our largest organ, and it encompasses every single part of us. And so at that young age, I really didn't pay much attention to skincare, I guess, like most kids. The last thing I wanted to do at that age, or any age and when you're growing up in a very foreign community, is to really stick out in a way that didn't make you feel comfortable or wanted. And so for me, I did everything that you weren't supposed to do with skincare. I would lay out in the sun. I would go tanning with my friends in a tanning bed. I played a lot of sports growing up. And back in those days, because I'm a little bit older, we didn't really wear sunscreen as much. Skincare was not as emphasized. It was basically accepted back in the day, you are with what you're born with, and that's all you have to work on, right? Being of Asian descent, Asians in general typically have that stereotype of having really great skin. And to actually touch on that, I do believe that part of the reason that there is that stereotype and part of the reason that it might be partially true is because of Chinese medicine and diet and the culture. Because as we're learning now, you know, what we eat is what we're made out of. So, but going back to skincare, so I wasn't exactly the best example of taking care of my skin as a youth. I was a little lizard. I loved being in the sun and sunbathing and getting dark. And for me, you know, being dark was everything. So I grew up surfing as well. So I was always in the sun playing sports and surfing and just laying out and having a good time and not really thinking about the consequences of what the impact of being in the sun would do to our skin. So it's funny, you know, fast forward to years later, when I got into Chinese medicine, I didn't really realize how much of a connection there was with our skin health, how we look and how it is, and also our internal health. So in Chinese and Eastern medicine, outside health reflects inner health. And so that's when I really started getting into being aware of skincare. Now, up until that point, you know, I had a previous career in fashion. So for me, it was all obviously obviously based on aesthetics to a degree, but you know, I was also in my 20s. When you're in your 20s, you can probably get away with a lot more because your body's still active and your body's a little more forgiving of bad habits. But as they say, you know, I think Coco Chanel once said, you know, the face that you get when you're 50 is the face that you've earned. And so when I got into Chinese medicine in my early 30s, that's when I did start seeing signs of aging, premature aging, and also just learning about this medicine that really encompasses not only how we feel in our health, but also how we look and how that all really is intertwined.
So I also know that you do acupuncture. That's obviously a big part of your practice. And I want to ask you how you got into acupuncture. What was the catalyst for that? And, you know, specifically, I know that you focus on facial rejuvenation acupuncture, which I think is such, you know, a beautiful marriage of skincare and, you know, this beautiful traditional Chinese medicine practice. Can you just tell me more about your practice?
Sure, absolutely. So I kind of fell into acupuncture as well. It was definitely not planned. Growing up where I grew up in the South, you know, my parents didn't raise me they raised us with some Asian culture, but for the most part, they wanted us to assimilate with our surroundings, our environment, our classmates, which is understandable. So, you know, Chinese medicine was not really practiced in our home. Now, in some ways, you can also say Chinese medicine also is Chinese culture because the medicine is so ingrained in the culture that if you, for example, certain foods are considered medicinal, right? Like dates or goji berries or even cinnamon. And so those were also things we would eat more frequently than, say, the average American household. So in some ways, it was already embedded in my childhood just from the way that we ate. But, you know, other than just those foods, I really didn't have any exposure to Chinese medicine until much later in life. When I was in my late 20s and still working in fashion in New York City, I was experiencing just a crazy bout of anxiety, being a little angry, a little jaded, not really sure why, and just wasn't able to express my feelings and emotions. Instead, I would suppress them and act like everything was okay and, you know, and maybe do what most New Yorkers do when they're stressed is go to a bar or, you know, maybe even have an occasional cigarette, which I totally regret, but it did happen. And so I was self-medicating in a way that was not healthy. It was just suppressing and covering a Band-Aid on the root of the problem, which is really dealing with the way I felt. And so, which was at that point very negative towards my approach at living life at that moment. At work at the time when I was at this one particular company, one of my really good friends sat next to me and she actually was very, very open-minded. And I did confide in her how I was feeling. And she actually mentioned and encouraged me to go get acupuncture, which for me was kind of a random thing to say because for all I knew is, you know, I would have a glass of wine after work or I'd go do X, Y, and Z to try to relax. But I never thought of actually going into my own medicine, my own culture. And so I ended up I just found a random place in Chinatown. Sounds like something out of the movies, but I went in and had one treatment done and it changed my life. And I had the best sleep of my life to this date. I remember going to bed around 9, waking up at 7 with no alarm, feeling so refreshed, like someone had hit the reset button on me. And I was like, how is it that this works? I mean, it felt like even though it was one good night's rest, it felt like 1,000 nights rest. It was incredible. And so it really got the wheels turning and it made me realize, well, shoot, if this is something that can really affect me so positively, how else can it help other people as well? It has to be able to help other people, you know? So that's kind of how I started looking into acupuncture. And at the same time, you know, I was about to hit 30. I was kind of looking back at my life, figuring out if this is what I want to do for my career, stay in fashion and I think it was just a turning point. It was an epiphany for me after that one treatment. I think, you know, for me, it was really opened my mind that, hey, there's other things that you can do to give back to the world to help people feel better and also look better. So I left fashion and enrolled in acupuncture school and yeah. And then here I am many years later practicing Chinese medicine.
That's incredible. And I know today we're going to talk about a different aspect of Chinese medicine, which is Gua Sha. I know this is something that, you know, you talk about a lot and you have informed me quite a bit about. So I'm so excited to get into this with you just because I know you're so knowledgeable about it. And it's a practice that I love, that I do almost every day. You know, it's something that once I was introduced to it, I realized it was almost like a missing link in my routine, not even just for the aesthetic benefits, but just because it was just something that I looked forward to in a really meaningful way. So let's go ahead and lay the groundwork. What is gua sha and what is the history of it?
Right. So the word gua sha comes from the Chinese word meaning literally to scrape the skin, which sounds aggressive, but it's actually not. The idea of gua sha is creating a microcirculation in the area that's being treated.
So gua sha has been widely studied in Eastern medicine for ages, and it has been studied for several conditions and several uses. One area that has been confirmed several times over is its ability to create microcirculation in whatever area it was just used on. For the skin specifically, one study found that microcirculation increased immediately following the session and then for up to 25 minutes post-session.
So gua sha, the whole idea of gua sha is very simple. It's basically taking any flat, smooth surface, applying a little bit of lubricant oil to the skin, and then taking that flat, smooth surface and making even pressured strokes in one direction over that area that you want to treat. Historically speaking, gua sha has been around for thousands and thousands of years. I mean, there is actual proof that it's been around as far as the Paleolithic age, but more or less in Chinese medicine, it's been around for about 3,000 to 4,000 years. And the whole idea of gua sha, traditionally speaking, was to give you instant relief. And that's the nice thing about gua sha is that it's a very different type of modality where it treats the outside of the skin, but it does so much good in the inside of the body as well. So gua sha has been around for thousands of years, being used in China and all over Asia. And traditionally, it was looked at as like a family remedy, as like folk medicine, something that was passed down from generation to generation that was just in your culture that you didn't think twice of doing. And the reason it's been around for so long and it's still around is because it works. And so typically speaking, in Chinese families, what you would do is you would actually gua sha someone the season before so they don't get sick. So the whole idea of Eastern medicine and Chinese medicine and gua sha is all about preventative medicine. It's actually treating the body before it gets ill. And that's what makes it so effective. Now, mind you, you can also treat it when it is ill, but it's obviously much better if you can do some prevention so that you don't have to become sick. So gua sha in itself is, you know, a cultural phenomenon in terms of it's just so common. And it's really interesting to see the dichotomy of how gua sha is seen as if you go to Asia versus how it is in, say, the Western Hemisphere. Because I know right now there's a movement towards facial gua sha and gua sha in general as more of a beauty trend. But in actuality, it's been around for thousands of years for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, it has such a long history of use. And you know, to your point that in the West, it's seen as a facial manipulation tool, which is, you know, how many of us use it, often myself included, but it does traditionally have a body practice. And I would love to hear about how it's used on the body. And then, you know, was it traditionally used on the face as well? Like, when did it kind of move from a body modality onto something that is now seen as a skincare tool?
Right. So gua sha in itself has always been originated from a body practice, right? And so here's where it gets kind of funny. So in the East, gua sha is just something that, like, say, for example, you know, like it's equivalent to you being here and saying you have a headache and popping a Tylenol. I know it's not exactly the same, but it's kind of been accepted into that. That's how common it is in the Eastern culture. Everyone has either a gua sha tool or can use something with a flat, smooth surface to use gua sha. And so it's not as glamorized in the East as it is in the West. It's been around for such a long time that, you know, we never really thought that it would transfer to the face because of the way that it is. So let me just backtrack and talk about what gua sha is And so you can kind of understand how it became like a facial gua sha trend or how it became a thing. So gua sha is all about creating something called a microcirculation in the body. And the whole reason you want to do it is because number one, it gives you instantaneous relief of muscles and ligaments and soft tissue. And number two, it actually helps with looseness and blood flow to that area. So in Chinese medicine, we look at microcirculation as a big deal. It is something that, you know, in our bodies as we age, circulation in general just tends to slow down. And so in order to be healthy, according to Chinese medicine, you want to have proper flow of qi and blood circulation. Qi is the energy life force. Blood is the nourishment that qi pushes along to help nourish the cells and the muscles and the tissues and organs of the body. And so as we get older or as we go through strifes or stress or any type of, you know, challenges to the body, it can cause what we say is stagnation of qi and blood in the body. And what gua sha does is it comes in and addresses specific areas depending on where you're gua sha-ing, and it creates a microcirculation. And that allows for fresh blood flow to come in, fresh qi. It allows for cellular detoxification faster. It also allows for lymphatic drainage. And also release of heat toxins is what we consider in Chinese medicine as something that can also cause issues in the body. And it also reinforces the immune system. And most importantly, especially in facial gua sha, it helps to relax the muscles. So it gives you that Botox effect. Now remember, Botox, as we know, helps to relax the muscles in the face, right? And when it relaxes the muscles in the face, we look lifted, we look younger, we look more youthful, quote unquote. So gua sha does the same exact thing. Facial gua sha helps to relax muscles on the face so you have that lifted, fresh glow look. And it's, even though it's a more temporary effect, it actually retrains your body and your face to be better at the microcirculations to that area and also to help with lymphatic drainage as well.
Yeah, so speaking of lymphatic drainage, you know, I don't think you can talk about gua sha without talking about this system of the body. I also know that in, you know, in the West, it's a system of the body that most people don't fully understand. It's just not something we talk about as much, and it's not something that we necessarily integrate into our daily practices. I would love if you could just explain what the lymphatic system is, what does it do for our bodies, and specifically, what does it do for our skin?
So the lymphatic system in Western medicine is such an intricate system that I'm surprised is it more of a common knowledge that they should actually teach in general for health. It's basically a network of tissues and blood vessels and organs that actually move to create this fluid called lymph, which is what you hear of when you say lymphatic or lymph nodes. And it's basically like this type of plasma that goes around the circulatory system and helps to protect the body. So it helps to fight against infection. It helps increase white blood cells.
She just mentioned white blood cells. So white blood cells are your immune cells. So your body sends them to areas where they need to fight aggressors. Gua sha helps stimulate white blood cells. This is why in Eastern medicine, the practice is seen as a useful tool for the immune system. And for the skin, a facial gua sha practice is seen as a regenerative and healing tool.
And so that's why when you hear of the word lymphatic system and you hear of lymph nodes, and you might even have this experience of certain areas of your body where there's lymph nodes swell, that's usually a signal that your body's telling you, hey, there's something going on in this area. There's an infection I'm fighting. So I'm going to show it by, you know, putting this fluid here so we can build it up and push it out. And it's really interesting too, because actually organs are a big part of the lymphatic system. So say like our bone marrow, our lymph nodes, of course, even the spleen. So the spleen in Chinese medicine is so important because it actually dictates so many things outside of Western medicine use. So in Western medicine, the spleen is known as creating, helping to create white blood cells and helping fight infection. They're finding more and more through studies that it's becoming more and more important as part of a big part of the immune system. In Eastern medicine, the spleen is looked at as so many things. It helps with our reproductive system. It helps keeps our muscles and energy high. It's a really important digestive organ that really helps with digesting food and quote unquote digesting life energetically. The lymphatic system is a huge part of why facial gua sha has become very popular as well, because people notice right away their faces, if they wake up puffy or tired or slightly discolored, after a few minutes of facial gua sha to their face, they notice a huge difference. The face looks more lifted, it looks more slimmer, it looks more angular and sculpted.
So quickly, I do want to talk about qi and life force. This is, you know, something that is talked a lot about in Chinese medicine. And perhaps a Western audience may not understand the intricacies of it. And I would just love to hear you talk about it, just because I know that it comes up a lot when you're having a gua sha discussion or if you're having an acupuncture discussion. And I just think it would help people understand what we're talking about.
Sure, absolutely. So qi is really interesting. The word qi, it's spelled Q-I. It is basically, you've probably seen or heard the word being thrown around. It means life force, which in itself sounds really intense. So an easy way to explain it is it's energy. It's how we feel. Are you low energy? Are you high energy? But what's great about qi is that it is in every living thing on this planet. You know, blades of grass have qi, insects have qi, humans, of course, have qi. And qi is what keeps us alive. It's basically the living thing that keeps everything going. And qi in itself, the energy, the life force, rotates in the body, in an adult human body, every 28 minutes and 48 seconds, which is why that's why when you get acupuncture done, we keep you on the table for at least half an hour. Qi is really amazing. Qi is what really pushes your body in life. And what I mean by that is it helps to, qi is what helps you grow. Qi is what helps you live. Qi is what helps you digest and learn. And so it is everywhere. We're surrounded by qi. Qi is energy, and you know that also plays in part with the law of thermodynamics, which is energy cannot be created nor destroyed, just transferred. I think that's the first law of thermodynamics. So qi in itself is always around us, and it can be transferred. And it can be also, there's exercises and ways you can do to regain some of your lost qi, such as qi gong, which we can talk about another time, also through acupuncture, of course, and Chinese herbs.
So, you know, those are some ways that you can help your qi. What are some ways that, or what are some signs that maybe you have a depletion of qi, or, you know, is it appropriate to say your qi is out of balance? Is that an appropriate phrase, or how should I phrase that?
Yeah, so we typically say qi deficiency. So typically we look at it as a scale, right? Like you want everything, the whole idea of Chinese medicine is balance in the body, balance of circulation, balance of qi, balance of emotions. It's all about finding that moderate balance, which is in modern day society so hard to find. But that's why these modalities work really well in the body, because it helps bring your body back to a homeostatic form of balance. And so for us, like in Chinese medicine, you know, qi, we describe something when you're losing qi or when you're feeling really tired is called qi deficiency, because it's a deficiency of qi. Now, there are rare instances where you can have too much qi, but that's very rare, and it's really pretty much unheard of nowadays in the modern day society, because there's so many things in our everyday life that can be very draining, right? And so one of the things that they teach you in acupuncture school is actually preserving your qi and protecting your qi so that people don't take that energy from you. I'm sure we've all had instances where once you have a conversation with someone, whether it's at work or outside of work, where you feel drained afterwards and you don't know why. That's typically because energy transference is happening. Sometimes people can actually, quote unquote, take your qi without you realizing it. And so you have to be very protective of it. And, you know, also in Chinese medicine, we do believe that every single human is born with a certain amount of qi, a certain amount of energy in their life. So you don't want to use it too much when you're younger. You actually want to spread it out so that you, as you age, you'll age gracefully, you'll age healthily. You won't age in such a bad way where you might even have a shortened life. So a lot of examples I love to give my patients is you can take NFL players, football players that have gone pro when they're young, have been beaten up left and right. You know, you look at them now and they look like they're 80 years old. Some of them are only, you know, in their mid to late 40s. It's because they use up so much of their qi. Their body has been taken on so much of that grunt force from outside that their qi is basically not really there anymore. And so when you don't have that much qi, when you use too much qi in the beginning of your life, it kind of sets the pace for how you're going to age, which is not necessarily a good way to age without a lot of qi. That's when you have a lot of health issues come up. So qi is very important because it actually determines our quality of life and how healthy we are and how our bodies can fight through forms of our immune system, through regenerating, such as our skin, through even the way that we talk and the way that we think. So qi is very important. It's everywhere, and it's something that is crucial and vital to preserve as we age.
So, you know, you've mentioned a few ways to address, you know, qi deficiencies. Acupuncture is one. You know, obviously the foods and the herbs that you ingest is another. How does gua sha play a role in this? Does it have to do with the circulation that you've mentioned? Like, how does that fit into this larger picture?
So qi plays a role in facial gua sha because it also is impacted by gua sha. So what we talked about earlier, how gua sha creates a microcirculation in the body, that microcirculation allows for the unblockage of qi and blood. And so in Chinese medicine, qi and blood is looked at as something that needs to circulate smoothly in the body. And when it doesn't circulate smoothly in the body, that's when issues start happening. When there's a blockage that can be caused by internal force such as stress or emotions, or external forces such as trauma or, you know, X, Y, and Z factors. But in general, gua sha really does help with unblocking qi and blood stagnation because it helps to unblock. Basically, it adds pressure to those muscle areas or the areas of tissue that you're addressing. And that in itself helps to move the qi in the blood. And also with facial gua sha especially, there are so many acupuncture points that are on the face. So the face is the most responsive thing, the fastest healing part of our body, right? So if you ever get a cut on your face, you'll notice it'll heal much faster than any other place on your body. It's because that's the most amount of nerve endings, of lymph nodes, of blood circulation to the face, to the brain. And so with that in mind, when you do facial gua sha, you're actually helping that circulation, not only to the face and the brain, but also to the rest of the body as well.
So I would love to talk about the actual practice of gua sha and how one can go about starting a gua sha practice and, you know, just the ins and outs of it. So why don't we start with the basics? How do you choose a stone or a tool? You said that you can use any sort of flat surface. Is there one that you recommend? What do you use? You know, how do people find their tool?
So with gua sha tools, it can be overwhelming, especially nowadays. If you log on to social media and you're seeing people holding these different, looks like flat pieces of stone, the golden rule to finding a good piece of gua sha stone is that you want to use something that's all natural, something that's not made in a lab. So typically speaking, you'll see things online that are like, you know, made of quote unquote jade or pink quartz. Well, first of all, anyone that's into gemology knows that jade is very expensive. Real jade is expensive. So anything that's priced basically under $50 that's claiming it's jade is probably not real. There is a lot of concern right now with a lot of cheaply made gua sha tools that are floating around because it's labeled as pink quartz or jade. And, you know, any kind of synthetic materials that are made that we're applying directly to our skin, you know, there's something called off-gas, which happens when you have something new, something that's made of chemicals. It basically means that there's chemicals, the gas from the chemicals before it settles needs to steep off of that surface. So a great example is for those of you guys that buy a new yoga mat, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. It's that weird smell that it gives off first because it's been, you know, chemically, synthetically made and treated for the most part. And so the same thing applies to gua sha tools. When you're looking at a gua sha tool, you want to look for something that is natural and genuine, okay? And you also want to look for something that will be something that you find would help your particular situation. So for example, if you're doing gua sha on the body, you're going to need a longer, bigger, wider tool to cover more surface area than if you're doing it on the face. A lot of gua sha tools that are out there right now, they do the job. And let me backtrack by saying that traditionally speaking, gua sha tools were very simple. They were the side of a soup spoon. They were a side of a coin. They were the side of anything that's flat, smooth. And, you know, that's why in Eastern culture, when you do gua sha, it's like anyone can do it because all you have to find is either a soup spoon or something that's around.
That's funny. When you said that it can be anything, my head immediately went to, oh, I could have been doing this with a spoon the whole time. I had no idea.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. But you know what? Soup spoons are not exactly that glamorous, nor do they sell to the mass market. But yeah, traditionally speaking, it's, and this is what's so beautiful about gua sha is that this is a type of modality medicine that's accessible to anyone. And that's what I really love about it because, you know, like I said before, traditionally speaking, it's been ingrained in Asian culture for such a long time. We don't think anything of it. You don't have to have a medical degree. You don't have to, you know, have quote unquote experience with it. But, you know, obviously once you start doing it, there are certain techniques and ways to make it work in your favor for what you're addressing. And so going back to the tools, for me personally, I've gone through a gamut of gua sha tools that can work for you. And bottom line is they all work. It just really depends on what you want to work on. So for me, I've discovered this one tool called, it's called the Edgy Tool, and it's by The Essentialist. And they create such a beautiful tool. It's made of agate. So agate's a type of stone that's actually neutral. And so it's natural and it's beautiful too. So when you apply it to your face, there's no off gas. It's all natural and it's a neutral temperature. So that's one thing too with facial gua sha. You've probably seen different types of stones being used. And in actuality, stones all have certain types of energies and frequencies, as you probably know, but they also have different types of temperatures. So for example, if you use a stone that's darker, typically that's going to hold more heat and more warmth. And that's something you want to apply to your skin, say in colder weather, than something that's lighter that you apply in warmer weather. So it's almost like when you dress, typically during the winter time, we tend to wear darker colors, right? Because it also inadvertently keeps heat in our bodies because the color black and darker colors absorb sunlight. So it's the same kind of idea where when you're depending on where you live and what the temperature is like, you can actually adjust it and customize it so that you get the best, the most maximized benefits from even the color and type of stone that you pick.
I think that's so fascinating. And I love the idea of, you know, creating a gua sha routine for your specific needs. You know, there is no one size fits all practice for this. And I think people sometimes get hung up on that idea of what's the perfect way to do it. And the perfect way to do it is whatever one is right for you. And I think that's such a beautiful reminder to tell people because, you know, just because you go on YouTube or, you know, you look up your favorite Instagram influencer and they're doing it a certain way, that's not necessarily the only way to do it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, with facial gua sha, what I love about it is that it puts you back in your own body. It makes you present and mindful of what your body and what your face is experiencing at that moment. And so that's what I love about this type of modality is that not only do you become more comfortable and familiar with your face, but you become more in tune with how you feel and how your body reacts to it. And that in itself, any kind of reaction to any modality is always feedback for you. It's always telling you, okay, this is where my body is. This is where I'm at. And what can I do to improve or what do I need to work on or not work on? One thing I will comment on with facial gua sha is that a lot of the videos that you're seeing out on social media, for the most part, you know, it's pushing the gospel of facial gua sha, which I absolutely love. But I will say that a lot of the videos that are out right now are really for people that are younger. So when I say younger, I mean, as you know, skin, when it ages, the dermis becomes thinner, it becomes more sensitive. So a lot of the videos that are out there are usually women under the age of 30 with still very healthy skin because of genetics or just because they're young and they're pulling their face really aggressively or they're pressing really aggressively. And so here's the thing with facial gua sha. There are some certain basic guidelines to know. One of them is that you always want to go in an upward motion. And the reason you want to do this is because the direction up is always a lifting motion, right? So there's even expressions that say, oh, I'm feeling down, right? So that means you're like tired or you're sad or whatnot. But the direction up energetically helps to lift. And so anytime we're doing facial gua sha, if you're ever, ever, ever concerned about what you're doing or have no idea, the direction is to always go up. And number two, you always want to start off with a clean face, clean hands, and a clean tool. Those are very, very important because you're basically going to be pushing an object into your skin and doing it several times in a row. And you want to make sure everything is clean so you're not actually pushing stuff into your pores. And the third is very important too, is that choosing a very good, high quality, high vibrational facial oil.
Yes, this is what I wanted to talk with you about, because I get so many questions about what oil should I be using for this. And, you know, I try to help them, but I feel like you could probably help us a little bit more.
Right. So the golden rule is to use oils that are made for the face. So coconut oil is not made for the face. And that is something that I don't know where it started from. People have been using it for decades now, but it actually is shown to clog pores. So you don't want to use coconut oil. The oils that I recommend are ones that are made for the face are things like jojoba oil. And it's really interesting because jojoba oil is actually the closest thing to skin sebum. So skin sebum is the natural oils that our skin produces to keep it moist and keep the bacteria out and protect the skin layer.
So yes, structurally, jojoba oil is very, very, very similar to your natural sebum, or the oils that your pores produce. This is more of a fun fact, but back in 2009, researchers set out to create synthetic sebum, or sebum created in a lab setting. The bioidentical blend contained 17% fatty acid, 44.7% triglycerides, 12.4% squalene, and 25% wax monoester from, well, jojoba oil.
And so when in doubt, if you have very sensitive skin, you can always try to use jojoba oil first, because that usually will give you non-reactive results in that way. But for me personally, I use two different types of oil. One of them is, you know, it's reasonably priced. It's by the brand The Ordinary, and they have this really nice organic cold press rosehip seed oil. So rosehip seed oil is actually shown that in small increments when it's used frequently, actually has the same effect as retinol in a long-term effect, which is really crazy because it doesn't give you those retinol, what you hear about when you first start retinol, which is like the peeling, the irritation, the sensitivity, the redness. So rosehip oil, for the most part, is safe. Now, I have had patients in the past that have been reactive to it. So like anything that's new to your skin, you should definitely do a test patch first to see if you have a reaction to it. But that's something that I really recommend is if you don't know what to start off with is either jojoba oil, rosehip seed oil that's organic and cold pressed. And also the one that I really like to use with my patients in the office and what I use personally almost on a daily basis is something by the brand called Essentialist Inc. And they have this beautiful, high quality, high vibe oil that is just like liquid gold. It's basically the more affordable brand version of Venture's Daughter. So it's much more affordable. It's 90% of the ingredients are organic, and it's like comes from like the highest, highly sourced from the most quality places. It's such a beautiful oil that really a little goes a long way. It's rich, but it doesn't cause breakouts. And it has things like pomegranate seed oil. It has things like, I think I'm going to probably butcher this, but bakuchiol, which is the natural and safe.
Yeah, I always get it wrong too, but that sounds right.
Yeah, it has argan oil. So it has all these like seed oils, which are really good for you. And what I love too is sea buckthorn fruit oil. Have you heard of that?
I have, but will you tell us more? Because the benefits aren't coming to the top of my head right now.
Sure. So sea buckthorn is something that's native to the Norwegian. It's a type of fruit. They look like little orange berries, and it's native to the Scandinavian countries. So it's not really, you don't really hear of it here because of the climate that it grows in. And it has one of the most highest levels of vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin E, vitamin B, as well like containing like folic acid, tartanic acid, ferulic acid. Yeah. And it's this bright orange color. So say, for example, when you're using this oil, you'll notice it looks like liquid gold because it's almost like an orangey color. And that's because of the high potency of vitamin C in it. And it's so great because it's great for softening and smoothing all skin types. And you can actually ingest it as well. The facial oil you cannot ingest, but typically you could take, like me personally, I'm taking sea buckthorn fruit oil as capsules on the side every day. And it has something called omega-7s, which are not really highlighted in when you hear about nutrition, but it's another form of omega that really helps the body with anti-inflammatory, with inflammation, and also helps with the brain health as well.
So you apply your oil, right? And then I know that you said you should always go up, but you know, where do you start on the face. I've heard conflicting that you should start on the forehead versus you should start at the jaw versus you should start on, you know, the throat. What do you tell people?
So I actually say start at the neck if you can. So you can look at it as the neck is like the gatekeeper, the bodyguard for all the fresh blood and chi flow from the body to the face, right? And so you want to make sure that that flow is even, it's open, so that you can actually get the most maximum benefits of doing facial gua sha. And if you think about it, if your neck is like creaky or achy or sore, you know, that is also an indication that there's some kind of stagnation per se. And so what's beautiful about facial gua sha is that not only does it encompass the face, or at least in my practice, it also encompasses the neck and also the clavicle area. So what I typically say for beginners is, or for people that are starting off, is to apply to a clean face and neck some oil. Okay, you can just pat it in, and you can obviously, if you have long hair, put your hair up and then remove any necklaces or anything around the neck that would get in the way. And then you're going to take your, and this is where you've probably seen differences. This is probably where you've seen differences in social media, where you see some people go up the neck, the back of the neck, or go down. So pretty funny, because gua sha in general, typically the golden rule is you don't want to gua sha over bone because it can be very painful. Gua sha, traditionally speaking, was used over soft tissue and muscles. And so gua sha also, traditionally speaking, when it was used on the body, is done so in a way that it causes this really weird, it almost looks like road rash. It's called petechia. That's the medical term for it. And it's basically just raised broken blood vessels that are not caused by trauma though, mind you, but it's caused by just repetitive motions and pressure. And so what that is in Chinese medicine, when we see that, we say that it actually helps to release heat from the body. Heat in Chinese medicine can be very detrimental to the body, because what we say is everything, if it's stayed in the body long enough, whether it's a pathogen or an emotion, eventually turns into heat. And heat, as we know, if you've lived in countries that have droughts or that have like really high temperatures, it can be very intolerable. It's really hard to have a good, healthy body when there's too much heat in the body. It's all about balance. It's all about balancing hot and cold, and the qi and blood, and yin and yang. And so going back to facial gua sha and gua sha-ing the neck, I've seen people actually gua sha down the spine, which if you're a beginner, I would say just avoid that for now, the back of the neck, the spine part. You can gua sha on the muscle tissues either side of the spine. And what I normally do is I start off at the hairline, the base of the hairline, and just go down to where your neck kind of blends into your back. So I usually go, for me personally, I go in a downward motion, only because, and this is where it gets kind of, you know, this is where you can tailor it to how you feel, because everyone is going to feel different on any day that they wake up. Our bodies are constantly changing. So for you, if you can experiment and find that, well, if you gua sha from the base of the neck up to the hairline and that feels better, then by all means do it. For me personally, and just because of traditional gua sha, I always go at least at the back of the head, at the back of the neck, from the hairline down. So what I'll do is I'll do it one side, on one side of the spine of the neck. I'll do it for maybe, you know, anywhere between 10 to 30 times, which sounds like a lot. So this is also something you should be aware of, because our face is so delicate and it's much smaller and less muscular and has different types of skin that's on our face versus on the rest of our body, right? Like the skin on our face, the dermis is much thinner. You can go a little bit more aggressive on the neck, at least on the back of the neck. And so you're going to do it a couple times to a point where you're going to start seeing, and you actually do want to see some redness. And that redness, which also can turn into petechia, is just a sign of blood flow getting to that area. Remember, gua sha causes a microcirculation, which is really important in, you know, getting out the heat toxins, getting the cellular toxins out, getting the heat toxins out, and bringing fresh blood flow into that area so your muscles can relax, the ligaments can be nourished by the blood and qi, and that you'll be healthy there. And so you won't have as many, say, muscular issues or skin issues in that area that you're addressing. And so when you're doing the back of the neck, you know, like I said before, you want to do it a little bit more, you can do the pressure a little bit harder, and you'll see. I mean, this is, once again, when people ask for general tips, this is the ones that I give because it's a safe one, and it's one that people will start realizing, okay, this is what works for me. And like building on what you said before, what's so beautiful about this type of modality is that it really is catered to who you are, where you're at that moment in time.
Sure. That's such good advice too. It's like if you're a beginner and, you know, you are starting this off on your own, it's always best to start at the most simple and gentlest, and then you can incorporate other tricks as you go along. But, you know, as you're getting used to the pressure and getting used to these tools and how it feels, like, you know, start at the basics. Like you said, like, you know, this very gentle, very, you know, simple practice that you're teaching our audience right now. I think that's really great advice, because I think some people hear about Gua Sha and all of a sudden they want to be like expert level right away. And, you know, you take your time to respect the practice. People have been doing this their whole lives. Like, you can't learn how to do expert level stuff like after a week.
Right. And it's also getting to know yourself, right? Because just because what I do on me doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work on or reflect on you is what you need. So for example, I incorporate Gua Sha even when people come in to see me for acupuncture for TMJ, because Gua Sha really helps to loosen up those muscles and that connective tissue around the jaw and behind the ears. And that allows for more blood flow so that the jaw can relax and so that TMJ won't be as painful and won't be as present. So, you know, when it comes to like the 101s, the golden rule is that when you do Gua Sha, you want to go up. The back of the neck is something that you can, that's either if you want to go up or down, that's totally up to your preference. But when you get to the front of the body, where the front of the neck begins, that's where it kind of becomes a little more stringent. And so, you know, the skin on our neck is very delicate. It basically matches the skin, the consistency of it as the same as underneath our eyes, which is very delicate. And so a lot of people realize, you know, as we age, one of the first signs of aging is around the eyes and actually our neck and our hands, not necessarily our skin on our cheekbones or our chin or whatnot. So what I like to tell my patients is when you're doing the front of your neck, I actually add an extra bit of oil there just to make sure it creates a smooth, lubricant surface that the tool will glide on without pulling on the skin. And that's one thing that I've seen a lot of, you know, misrepresentation on social media, is that there's a lot of pulling of the skin, which I think is really unnecessary. I have a funny story to tell you, side note. So a couple years ago, so my background is Taiwanese, my parents live in Taiwan. And so I went to visit them a few years ago. And when I was there, I was like, you know what, I'm going to put together a facial Gua Sha workshop. I think it'd be fun because it doesn't seem like it's a big thing over there for whatever reason. So I put together this workshop. And people, when I put it together, first of all, a lot of people were contacting me and being like, is this real? Like, they would ask like questions like, you can actually do Gua Sha on the face? Because traditionally speaking, remember, Gua Sha is done to a point where it causes a red rash. It raises something called petechia, right? And so people didn't understand that when you're doing Gua Sha techniques on the body versus on the face, it's very, very different. And so fast forwarding to now,
that's so crazy, because that's just so opposite from how it's viewed here. I actually do Gua Sha on my body every now and then. Like, I don't do it super regularly. I mainly do the face, and people are like, you can do that? I'm like, yeah, that's actually the main point of Gua Sha is the body. It's weird that I only do the face.
Yes. I know. Yeah. And you know, it's a funny concept. When I was out there in Taiwan, in Taipei, you know, a lot of them, I mean, this is where it came from, that whole area. And it's weird how they were kind of taken back. A lot of them were shocked. They're like, you can actually Gua Sha the face. And I had to explain to them, of course, it's not the same techniques. It's not the same methods. It's the same idea. But it's you know, because the face is obviously, like we said before, it has a lot more lymph nodes. It has a lot more blood vessels, a ton of blood going to it. You have to, and the skin is much thinner and the muscle is much thinner. You have to be more gentle. So yeah, that's pretty funny that you also had to say that, because it's really interesting. You know, I do believe like facial Gua Sha has really started from a Western perspective, which is really funny because it's an Eastern, you know, modality per se. So what I do is I actually ask for my patients, if they're doing this at home, to, depending on the tool they're using, the tool that I actually recommend is called, it's by the Essentialist, it's called the Edgy Tool. And if you take a look at it, there's two notches that are cut out on either side that when applied right against the clavicle, which is your collarbone, it fits beautifully. It actually glides right along the collarbone, and you can actually kind of open up this whole area of the upper chest into the neck. And so when you first start Gua Sha-ing the front of your neck, you actually want to focus on your collarbones first. This is because there's a muscle there called the platysma muscle. And it's a muscle that's kind of overlooked, but a lot of people that are in plastic surgery know about this. This is what keeps our neck from becoming so crepey. It also is a very tissue-thin muscle that starts from the clavicle and goes all the way up to our jaw. So it's a very important part of the neck. And so this muscle can easily get tight and also have some kind of chi and blood stagnation where it doesn't look relaxed. So that's why we also see tension in, we start seeing necklines as well and tension in our neck. So it's really important to start off addressing the platysma muscle when you're doing the front. So you see, once again, on social media, people just jump right to the face. Yes, you can do that if you're in a rush or if there's something specific you want to work on. But if you're going to do the gua sha as a as an actual, you know, full exercise that you want to encompass, this will actually benefit you so greatly. Just doing, starting off with the neck first, then the back going down, and in the front, working through the collarbone and gliding over. And then when you're done with that, you're going to start off, well, first of all, with the collarbone, you want to start off the center where, you know, the center of the collarbone, there's a little notch for most people. If you take your finger and press it there, you can start off right in that little notch and glide from inward to the outside of the body on each side. So I do about 5 or 6 times. That area gets really red really easily because it's a very thin area. There's really not much fat there or muscle. It's just that one platysma muscle that's there. And then when you're done with that, then I focus on the front of the neck. Like I said before, I put a little bit of extra oil on the front of the neck because the skin there is very delicate, especially if we're older, if we have sensitive skin. So then what you want to do is you want to take the gua sha tool, the flattest part of it, and just start by gliding right over your Adam's apple and thyroid all the way up to the bottom of your chin. And you're going to do all these motions in smooth, even pressured strokes. And this is where it gets a little weird because, you know, if you're starting off, you're not really sure what that means for you. And that's, once again, just figuring it out for yourself what works best. And like what you said, building on something that's, you start off gentle, you start off easy, you start off slow, and then you can build your practice from there.
Yeah. I mean, what should the pressure feel like? You know, should it feel that, that's one of the most common questions I get is, should it hurt? Should it feel like it's pulling? Is there kind of like a sweet spot, at least when you're starting?
Right. That's a great question. So typically speaking, no, it actually should not hurt at all, especially when it's done on the face. When gua sha is done on the body, you have more muscles, you have more fat, you have more tissue, you can go a little bit more aggressive there. When it comes to your face and neck, you want to err on the side of being conservative and going more light than you think you need to, and then you can build from there. So when you're doing gua sha, you do want to use the gua sha tool so that you are getting as much surface as possible when you are doing each stroke and you're pulling up lightly against the skin. Now, here's the thing. That's such a subjective thing because for me, pulling lightly is very light, whereas for someone else, they can probably go a little bit further. And there's so many variables that come into that. It's your age, how your skin is, you know, if the dermis is thicker. Some ethnicities like Asian skin, the dermis is a lot thinner, so our skin's a lot more sensitive. So we do have to be a little bit lighter when it comes to gua sha. It also depends, you know, if you have any kind of skin issues, dermatitis, you know, any kind of psoriasis, acne. So those are all things that you have to consider too when you're doing gua sha on your skin, is you don't want to go too hard. I always emphasize that as a way of just, I guess you could say in life in general, it's a good rule. Just when in doubt, just take it slow and go soft, because that you can never go wrong that way. And you have all the time in the world to build up to a practice where you become more comfortable with using the tool, because getting familiar with the tool itself is another skill set. And then realizing what works on your face. So when it comes to pressure, what I like to say is the older you are, the less pressure you should use. And the reason I say that is because when you're applying pressure against the skin, you know, there is this pulling, slight pulling motion. And a lot of the videos that you see on social media are all women or men that are pretty much on the younger side of the scale. And so their skins are much more resilient and they still have the elasticity. As we age, as we get older, or if we have sensitive skin, you can't be pulling as hard as you see like in those videos, because that will actually damage your skin, especially if you end up doing this day in and day out several times a day. So, you know, that being said, once again, it comes to number one, getting to know who you are, who your body is, knowing, listening to your body and your face. And one way I practice is by actually doing gua sha lightly on my arm, on my forearm. So if you're first starting off, put a little bit of oil on your forearm, take the tool, and you can practice using each side gliding towards your fingers and just go lightly. And then you can kind of figure out what feels good for you. Now, the pressure in your arm is going to be feeling a little bit different than the pressure on your face, of course, but it gives you a general idea of practicing the strokes and how it feels and what you think works for you for that day. Because mind you, our bodies change all the time. And so say if you're about to start your period or you're on your period or you're about to end your period, your skin's going to be a lot more sensitive in general to pain, to pressure. And so you just need to know yourself as a woman. If you're doing this, you need to know your cycle. And so you can kind of work within the realms of that to get the maximum benefit for gua sha.
Sure. So I love the advice, one, of doing it on your arm as you practice. I think that's fabulous. So after you do the neck, where do you go from there? Again, I think the face is tricky and there's so many different, there's so much advice out there on how you should do this. What's like a good, basic, simple baseline routine that you would tell people for the face?
Right. So after you're done gua sha-ing the neck, you always start off at the jawline for me and work your way up. And what I like to do is I like to divide my face like down, like in half. So pretend there's an invisible line going straight down the middle of your face. And for some people, it's easier if they work one side of their face first and then go to the other. And in some ways, it's better that way because you can actually start seeing a difference. Gua sha, the beauty of gua sha is that it can give you almost instantaneous results. And so for those of you guys who are not sure if it works or not, that's one way you can tell is by actually just gua sha-ing one side of your face completely and then seeing how it impacts the other side. Our faces, naturally, generally speaking, are a little disproportionate. No face is actually symmetrical. So do keep that in mind. But generally speaking, you do want to start off with at the jaw, at the chin, and then you work your way up. So what I like to do is I like to take my tool, and it has this one notch on the side where I like to snuggle it right against my chin, right along the jawline. So it hugs the jawline and hugs the chin. And then I like to glide gently all the way up, following the jawline to the earlobe. And then I like to wiggle it at the earlobe, right in front of the ear, because that whole area there is very tense for most of us. It's a lot of where our stress is held, as also known as TMJ for most of us. So having that release right there will automatically allow more blood flow to your face. Because remember, we talked about the neck being like the bodyguard of the blood and qi going to the face. Well, the next step after getting through the neck is going to the chin, right? Because the chin is kind of like the second layer of security, getting to the rest, having access to the rest of the face. So I always emphasize, if you're in a rush and you really want to see a difference, work on the chin if you can. Work on the jawline if you can. The jawline and actually the eyebrows, believe it or not, I think are the most effective ways of seeing gua sha if you're in a rush. And that's what I do. And the reason I say eyebrows too, because, you know, the muscle, our eyebrow muscle is a very tense, taut muscle that tends to hold a lot of stress and tends to hold a lot of expression, a lot of emotions. So even if, say, you have Botox or in and around that area, it's still holding a lot of tension there that it, you know, it's much overlooked a lot when you get facial massages done to the face. So this is one great way of giving yourself a facial massage is through using your gua sha tool and actually hovering and just gliding right above your eyebrows. And it will feel so good. And there's a lot of interesting acupuncture points and meridians that run through the face, right through the eyes, through the eyebrows, into the forehead and into the scalp. So for people that are suffering from, say, they have dark circles under the eyes or eye puffiness waking up or even eye allergies, if you actually gua sha your eyebrows, it will help open up the eye. It takes away some of the redness, and it's really good for just working on the under eye bags and dark circles as well.
I love the idea of like quick gua sha. You just need to do this before an event, like hit these two spots. I think people are always looking for something that they can do just, you know, right before they go out. I want to ask about, because I have a lot of questions about this area, and a lot of people that I speak with talk about this area. You know, what about your cheekbones? Like, how do you handle that area? Because obviously so many people kind of want that sculpted cheekbone look. That's why we're all contouring our faces all the time, right? So how do you handle that area?
So, you know, with gua sha, there's different techniques. And this is where it gets a little bit more advanced. So typically when you're starting off doing gua sha, you use the tool. The tool is what keeps you in certain motions, right? But using the flat surface of the area, kind of angling it so that it's laying, majority of the tool is laying flat against your face when you're doing any of these strokes. what you want to do is there's a great way to carve out this whole area of the cheek. You actually want to start off in the inner eye with the corner of the gua sha tool. And then as you come around, you're going to wrap the tool around and get underneath the cheekbones. You're actually going to push in underneath, and then you're going to go all the way up into the hairline. And so this technique, it's a little bit hard to talk about. It's probably easier if I show it, but it's a great technique because there are acupuncture points right along the cheeks that actually help to activate the lymphatic drainage. It helps with qi and blood. It helps get that sculpted look, and helps. It's a very lifted look. Now, the reason it becomes more of an advanced technique is because when you're doing it, and this is something that most people, including myself, when I first started learning facial gua sha, you tend to be very stiff with your wrist. And so having a loose wrist when you're gua sha on your face means you can twirl your hands and your wrist around so that you can get different angles of the tool while you're doing the same momentous stroke. Does that make sense? So that's one thing. I taught a facial gua sha workshop at Dumbo House a couple years back, and I remember thinking, and this was a great lesson because, you know, if you've done it for so long, you tend to forget sometimes when people are starting off what they do and do not know. I remember looking out in the crowd and everyone wasn't really using the tool like I was demonstrating, where I was using my, you know, really getting my arm, my wrist into it, twisting, relaxing the wrist so that you can manipulate the tool to actually work with your facial features. And that right there was a great lesson because it was just something that I realized, you know, when you're first starting off with gua sha, there's a couple things that you have to keep in mind. You're going to be getting familiar with your face on a whole nother level and your skin. And the second thing is you have to get familiar with the tool that you pick that you're going to use. And that in itself can be, you know, a couple lessons in, a couple challenging, and also be comfortable holding it and knowing what you can do with it for what features you have that you want to work on for that day. And so those are all things that, you know, it's kind of a little bit multi-layered, but it's one of those things where once you have that down, once you're comfortable using your tool, sky's the limit with what you want to do. So typically you'll probably see there's been graphics out there that show, oh, this is the face, this is the direction you should go in. And like I said before, reemphasizing, you always want to go up when it comes to the front of the body. So whether it's the neck or the face, you always want to go in an upward, outward motion. And that's because you want to lift, right? Because if we try to go down, that actually pulls the muscle, the fascia, everything down, and it actually will make you feel and look tired. So the whole idea of lifting and sculpting is you want to go up and out. And so with cheekbones, you know, at the corner of this cheekbone, there's an actual acupuncture point that's really well known. It's called stomach four. It's along the stomach meridian, which is a digestive meridian, but it also helps nourish life to the body, right? It digests life. It nourishes life. It brings nourishment to the body. And so this point in particular, which is right at, if you want to touch your face, you can find it. It's right where your cheekbone meets the outer corner of, so if you want to actually take your finger, start off with the nostril and work your way out to the corner of the cheekbone. And it should be aligned with the outside corner of your eye almost on most faces, typically anatomically speaking, that's where you find it. This pressure point is actually an acupuncture point, is a great point to actually, you can actually press on it with your finger or with a gua sha tool, and it will actually help create a lifting mechanism in the face and the body to energetically lift through the soft tissue so it looks like you're sculpted.
So the last area I want to talk about is the forehead. Do you recommend people do the forehead? If so, how should they do it? You know, the lifting motion is a little bit harder in the forehead, right?
Right. So for most people, the forehead is, most concern is forehead lines, correct? So here's where it gets a little weird. A lot of my patients that come in have had Botox done. So just a disclaimer, if you've had Botox done, you do want to wait at least 2 to 3 weeks to have the Botox settle in the muscles before you do any type of gua sha on the face. Because if you don't, what happens is the gua sha, it's effective. It'll start pushing around that Botox. So the Botox might go to other parts of your face that you may not want.
Yikes.
Yeah. So that's always something I tell. So, you know, typically I'll be like, have you had Botox done? And they'll be like, no. And then I tell them, they're like, okay, yeah. So, you know, it's just being very honest with yourself and knowing where your starting point is. It's different for everyone. So for the forehead, I actually don't focus on the forehead as much, only because the forehead tends to get red very easily because that's where our brain is. That's the most amount of blood flow that goes anywhere in our body. Number two is that skin on the forehead is very thin for most people, especially as we age, and it's right over bone. so it doesn't feel as comfortable. And number three, if you really want to work the lines, yes, there are videos you've seen where people go in and they sit there and they kind of work through the lines to try to break up the lines. But if you really want to work on those lines, facial gua sha does not really do that trick. You're going to have to go actually deeper. You're going to have to do something like facial acupuncture or, yeah, I mean, basically it's going to have to go below the dermis because those lines are created, as you know, from just everyday expression and emotion of talking and living, right? It's repetitive motions of the skin that creates those lines. It's funny too, because I actually do face reading, and in face reading, we actually look at those lines as what we say, lessons learned in life. So from your hairline to your eyebrow, that basically represents your teens and 20s. And so you can kind of tell certain people's lines, if they don't go across fully, if they're not like full complete lines, if they're broken, it can mean a couple things, but one of them is also lessons not learned. It's really interesting. So going back to the forehead, now the forehead is something that I find I don't focus on as much. And here's why too. There are meridians that run through the forehead that actually go into the scalp. So you know, it's almost like kind of picking and choosing. Yes, you can go local. You can go directly to the forehead and work on the skin there if you want. It's not really going to make that much of a difference. What I find makes a difference is actually going into the scalp. So this is where it gets a little funny, because people are like, do I use oil in the scalp? I'm like, not really, but you also don't really go as hard in the scalp, right? So you actually want to take your tool and kind of start the hairline and kind of go, you know, basically right above your eye, the flat part that you want to line it up with where your eye is on your face in the hairline, and kind of go back like you're combing your hair. And that right there will actually help the scalp as well. Or I'm sorry, the scalp. Well, yes, it will help the scalp, but it also helps the forehead. So there's different approaches knowing to whether or not to go local or distal. And that is just kind of like the golden rule just in Chinese medicine and Eastern medicine, because we do that with acupuncture needles too. And you can do it with facial gua sha. Just understanding where, how the face connects and where it goes in the body, you can actually do distal facial gua sha and it works. It's pretty nuts. And this is why I think, you know, coming from a Chinese medicine background gives me an advantage in that way, because I actually understand the mechanics behind it, right? So also, one thing I wanted to add with facial gua sha, you know, it's pretty crazy. Yes, it is a great beauty skin regimen, but there's actual true science behind it. I just wanted to take a little bit of a dive into it, if you don't mind.
I am always all for the science behind it. So please dive in. I too have done a little bit of research on this, and I'm always blown away by, you know, what they're actually able to back up here. So please illuminate us.
Yeah. So it's so fascinating. So, you know, gua sha is looked at as a therapeutic kind of surface technique where it looks like you're just not, sometimes it doesn't look like you're doing anything. You're just gliding it on your face or on the skin. But in actuality, what this does is it actually goes deeper than just the skin surface level. You know, the pressure that you're applying, especially if it's repetitive pressure over the same area multiple times. They have a study that actually came out of Germany a couple years ago. And what they did was they had these volunteers come in and they had gua sha done on the back of their neck. And these subjects would do, I think, 2.5 minutes of gua sha every day for like 2 weeks. And how they would measure to see if it even made a difference in health was they use something called a laser Doppler imaging device, which basically kind of goes in and kind of can read underneath the skin to see how the blood flow is, how the blood vessels are. And that was one way that they could tell if it was making such a long-term impact. And what they saw was incredible. They did gua sha on these subjects. It actually caused a fourfold increase in microcirculation of that treated area. And so that's a big deal, because that shows that there's immediate decrease of inflammation in that area, that it actually helps with pain receptors in that area too. It actually helps to dull the pain receptors so that your pain tolerance actually goes higher. And it also increases white blood cell count, which helps with the immune, boosting the immune system. And so I thought that was really interesting. There's another study that came out of China that they actually use gua sha to treat chronic active hepatitis B, which is nuts, right? So the whole theory behind that is that gua sha actually helps, and these were all body gua sha treatments. So obviously it's a little bit different than what you're doing on the face, but the whole idea of gua sha is that it actually boosts the immune system and has an anti-inflammatory effect. So there was a group coming out of Harvard that came out with a study many years ago where they used something called bioluminescent imaging that basically showed that gua sha helps to, quote unquote, upregulates the gene expression that helps to create more of an antioxidant environment. And that also influences something, I guess the technical term is called hem oxygenase 1, also known as HO-1. And that not only did it help at that area, that localized area of gua sha, where it was gua sha'd, but it actually had an impact on multiple internal organ sites immediately after treatment, over a period of days following a gua sha treatment. That's insane. Like, just by, it's pretty nuts. So, you know, all these studies coming out of China where they've actually used it for both acute and chronic issues. Like, for example, most people in the U.S., or at least in my practice, come to me for gua sha where it's, you know, neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain, any type of pain that we do gua sha on the body. And also we do stuff for the face too, for like TMJ, headaches, stuff like that. But, you know, these studies coming out of China, I mean, they're going hardcore. They're looking at like hepatitis. They're looking at different types of musculoskeletal issues. It's pretty nuts. It's crazy how they actually said it also helps with the liver enzymes as well, boosting liver enzymes.
I have learned so much today. I can't believe how interesting this episode was. The last question I want to ask you, I can't believe we've reached the end, but what do you do for your skin? I have obviously seen your gorgeous face on Instagram, and I know how glowing you are. So please tell me what you do so I can do it as well. You know, I just, obviously you're such a wealth of knowledge with skincare. So I'd love to hear your routine.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. Well, a lot of it really is from the external point of view. I do gua sha. I don't do it every day though, only because for me personally, my skin is very sensitive. So I pick and choose the days I do it, usually depending on how I feel when I wake up. And oh, one last thing with gua sha is that when you do gua sha on the face, not only does it boost the skin, but it also boosts your mood. For those of us that have done gua sha and know, if you're tired, it actually wakes you up. It wakes up your eyes. It wakes up your face. It also wakes you up in general. And it's great for bringing blood flow to the brain. I do facial rejuvenation, also known as cosmetic acupuncture. I do that once a week. So I try to do that, make it a weekly routine. And that just goes a little bit deeper than facial gua sha. It really hits up a lot of the acupuncture points to help with qi and blood flow. It also helps boost collagen production. There's so many great things that it does. So I do that with also red light therapy. So it's kind of a combo. And I guess I'm very lucky because it's this like true self-care where I can, I have these capabilities and skills where I can do it all myself at home. But the other things I do too for skincare and self-care is, you know, sleep is so important and crucial, especially as you get older. I can definitely tell if I've had 6 hours of sleep or 8 hours of sleep. I mean, it's nuts. Also, you know, just the basics like nutrition, eating foods, a wide range of foods that are colorful and fresh and in season and organic if possible. And the number one thing that I've been working on as of late is really, you know, learning to process emotions better. Because what's really cool about facial gua sha too is that when you're doing facial gua sha, you know, we tend to hold emotions in the tissues in our bodies and in the muscles in our face. So when you're doing facial gua sha, you're also kind of releasing those emotions. Like you're actually releasing that energy from the face. So if you're holding a lot of tension in your jaw after you do facial gua sha, it's released. And what most people don't realize is when, you know, and going back to say Botox, because that's becoming more and more popular and more, you know, acceptable, is that when you're doing Botox and you're freezing that muscle, it's not allowing that muscle to hold that expression, which is why it smooths the skin, but it also causes long-term muscle atrophy, right? And it also causes issues where they have studies that show that women that give birth and right after they give birth, they go and get Botox done. When you're a newborn baby, your only ways of communication is through kind of like vision, right? Looking and reading the micro expressions in someone's face. That's how they start communicating. That's how babies start off. And so if you can't express micro expressions in the face, it's harder for the baby to understand what's going on. So there was a study that came out that showed that when newborn, you know, postpartum mothers get Botox done, that it's harder for their babies to pick up their emotions and that their brain development is a little bit slower. It's pretty nuts. It's like a trickle-down effect. Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, I think my personal thing is if it makes you happy, then do it because life is short and I get it. You know, sometimes people just want instant gratification, right? I mean, that's like our society today anyways. But if you can try to do it the more natural way, the reward will be much greater. It'll be more longer lasting and it's just healthier for you in the long run. And that's how our bodies respond. And I think that's what's great about facial gua sha is that because you want that instant gratification, it kind of gives you that. So it kind of plays into that whole, you know, I want to see results now, but I also want to stay healthy. And so that's why facial gua sha, I think, is a really nice medium to meet both. It's also, once again, going back to the emotional part, if you're ever feeling sad, gua sha on your face actually helps lift your mood. So it's pretty cool.
I couldn't agree more. I love the practice. You know, when people ask me, does it actually work, or, you know, is it all hype? You know, I always tell them, like, you got to get off social media. You have to stop looking at it through the lens of social media, and you have to look at it from a practice that has been around for centuries and it works and it has the studies behind it. I cannot recommend the practice enough from my own personal experience. So I thank you so much for being on here to explain it. Obviously, there's no one better to talk about it than you. You are obviously so well informed. So I so appreciate you coming here and, you know, explaining it to our listeners, because I personally, like, cannot get enough of it.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for letting me share my knowledge. And I hope your listeners will learn something from this, you know, that don't always believe everything you see on social media. And when in doubt, get in touch with your local facial gua sha specialist. They can definitely help you and put you in a direction where you feel more comfortable.
Hey guys, just popping back in here to say thanks for joining us this week at Clean Beauty School. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. If you're looking for more beauty content or just wellness content in general, don't forget to check out our website, mindbodygreen.com, our Instagram, mindbodygreen, and of course, our parent podcast, the Mind Body Green Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review us. Thanks again. See you next week.